enwa ofo muni enwa novio muni enwa mefon muni enwa dada muni ye pomla no soma ye pomla no se ola 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 no enwa ofo muni enwa.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Deborah Bradigam, who's a professor and director of the International Development Program at Johns Hopkins University and a visiting professor at the University of Bergen in Norway. She is the author of The Dragon's Gift, The Real Story of China in Africa. Welcome to Background Briefing, Deborah Bradigam.
Thanks. It's good to be back.
And the meeting that's taking place, the fifth annual summit of the BRICS group, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, this is the first time that they've all met in Africa. And, of course, China's new leader there, Xi Jinping, is there as well. So what's your sense then, Deborah, since you wrote about this and questioned this sort of new Chinese charm offensive in Africa in The Dragon's Gift, The Real Story of China in Africa. You're saying now that the honeymoon is over, that now they are working on their relationship and it's not purely harmonious by any means. So explain further, if you will.
Well, I think in about 2006 was when people really started to focus on the Chinese in Africa, and there really was a honeymoon period. There was a huge meeting in Beijing, and you had 44 African heads of state showing up. People were amazed at this. This has never happened in London. It never happened in Paris, and it never happened in Washington, but it did happen in Beijing. So it was quite an astounding success for the Chinese invitations. And this launched a period of kind of rosiness in the relationship. But as with any marriage, there are rocky spots, and they have been going through quite a few rocky spots. I don't think this means that China's going to be leaving Africa, that things are going to break apart, but they're getting realistic now. And so Xi Jinping is talking about this. He's trying to address some of the complaints that African governments have and African citizens. So I think he's being surprisingly forthcoming for a Chinese leader to be this open that the relationship has its rough spots.
Well, of course, the trade now in between China and Africa is at $200 billion in 2012. So that's not insubstantial. And of course, the BRICS themselves, that's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, their economies represent about 23% of the world's landmass, 43% of the population, and 17% of global trade. And they are, in many ways, the fastest growing group, are they not, in amongst, well, there's only the U.S. and the EU left, pretty much, right?
No, I think you're right there. And I think the fact that the BRICS summit is happening now, and that is happening in South Africa, is important. This is symbolic. You have a new world now. It's a new world order. You've got a world where Angola is making loans to Portugal. You've got a world in which the IMF is taking help from India to bail out Europe. And so having these five countries, South Africa is really a baby brick, but these five significant countries which represent the world's what we used to call the third world. They represent all those regions outside of Europe and outside of North America. And they're meeting together and they're discussing their shared interests. So it's really an interesting situation. That's why this is important. And that's why the fact this was Xi Jinping's first visit outside of China is also important.
Now, is he just following? I mean, wasn't it Hu Jintao, his predecessor, who was called the African in China because he had a real affection and interest in Africa?
I think Hu Jintao did have a special interest in Africa, but I think that's almost irrelevant. What we can see going back for the last few decades is that Chinese leaders, Chinese presidents and Chinese premiers have been going to Africa. I have a map in my book in which I document these trips. And they're going everywhere. In fact, one of the few countries they hadn't visited yet was the Republic of Congo. And that's one of the places that Xi Jinping is going to be going on this trip. But they've been regularly going to Africa. They've been showing Africa that it has China's respect and that China, that it matters for Chinese leaders. We're not giving Africa that same kind of message.
Well, indeed, we have some American hedge fund managers in the Congo buying up sovereign debt and squeezing, you know, this is the worst of kind of vulture capitalism. I don't know that you can make a case that that represents all of the Western involvement in Africa, but the historical record is not particularly good, is it?
Well, I think the historical record, if you want to go way back, of course, Africa's had a really unfortunate engagement with the West, slavery, colonialism, all of that. I think in current years, we have a mixture of areas in which we engage with Africa. I think our foreign aid program, which is in the United States, is actually quite generous, and it's pretty much focused on health. So we're doing a lot to keep Africans alive through that foreign aid program. A lot of it's going into malaria, HIV, AIDS. But what we're not doing is we're not treating African governments and African countries like real partners. We're basically saying, you have a lot of problems. We need to help you. We're here to save you. But we're not saying we're really here to engage with you as equals and let's see what kind of business we can do together. That's the message the Chinese bring, and it's really quite welcome.
And in terms of the political instability in Africa, we're just witnessing in the Central African Republic a group of military thugs taking over, looting everything, even the hospitals they're looting. I understand the Chinese are a bit gun-shy because they suffered a lot of losses. There are 40,000 Chinese workers working on an $18 billion project in Libya when the civil war took place, and they didn't see that coming, and they had to get out of Libya. I assume that the situation, the enormous investments that China's made in the oil in southern Sudan, which has to be piped out through northern Sudan, and they're basically, you know, almost going to war with each other on a daily basis. That has not necessarily proven to be a good investment. And then there was a major reversal in Myanmar, Burma, where the Chinese were trying to, I think, build this huge dam that the Burmese suddenly realized it was going to benefit China and not them. So give me a sense of the, you know, the successes and reversals, if you will, of China's involvement in Africa and by extension in Burma.
I think you've laid out some of the deeper areas of problems that the Chinese have had. And I think when you look at Libya, this has been a real wake-up call for the Chinese. As you said, they had $18 billion worth of business there. And this business was actually not oil or investment, but it was construction business. And you did have Chinese workers there. 34,000 had to be rescued. There were actually even more than that. At the end of 2010, according to official statistics, there were 46,000 Chinese working in Libya. That was about a quarter of all the Chinese working in Africa were in that one country. So this was very big business for them, and they were bitterly hit by that. And it caused them really to question why they didn't know beforehand how unstable Libya was. But I think nobody really had an idea of the Arab Spring. It surprised everyone. But in places like Burma, I think it's actually a very healthy move. What was going on there was a particular project that was very unpopular with the local people. And so with the new government coming into Burma, they're listening more to their population. It's the kind of problem that we call NIMBY, not in my backyard. People that didn't want hydropower project and a dam flooding their area, and they didn't like the way that the Chinese companies were not paying very much attention to social concerns in the area. They basically were just coming in and building the project, and it was going to be exporting electricity to China. So these kinds of things, really what we're talking about is globalization and the expansion of capitalism. And so this comes about as a problem full of conflict. It's been full of conflict when the West went out, and it's still full of conflict because you've got capital... You've got capital, labor kinds of conflict, so conflict between employers and employees. Right. And you've got problems for investors and people who are in the areas where they want to invest. So these kinds of the expansion of capitalism, the expansion of investment, the expansion of the market is not a smooth process. And the Chinese are hitting these kinds of difficulties right now, just the kinds that we have done in the past. So it's new for them. I think they'll be learning from it. But there's no question but that it's hit them hard.
And Deborah Brannigan, again, professor and director of the International Development Program at Johns Hopkins University and the author of The Dragon's Gift, The Real Story of China in Africa. What about reports we've heard of Chinese foremen and overlords, if you will, at these mines and other investments they've made, treating the African workers poorly? And there was a case in Zambia where some Zambian miners struck and the Chinese just opened fire on them with shotguns. So how isolated is that?
It's actually quite isolated. The one mine that we keep hearing about was just recently closed by the Zambian government because it had violated safety standards and labor regulations over and over again for years. And so the new government came in and they closed it down, quite rightly. This was a private Chinese mine, really the most egregious form of foreign investment, very irresponsible, and very bad labor relations. But to explain a little bit about what happened in that mine, when the managers came out with the shotgun, there were two cases in which Chinese workers, Chinese managers at that mine were actually killed by workers. So the labor relations had gotten so bad that the workers were killing the managers and the managers were shooting at the workers. Fortunately, none of them died. But this was a really bad situation. However, it's the one story we hear about over and over again, and I don't think it's typical.
And in Sudan, do you think the Chinese will recoup their investment there?
You know, one of the surprising things has been how smoothly they moved into the relationship with South Sudan. You would think that South Sudan, after fighting with North Sudan and having China be very firmly in North Sudan's court, that they would find it much more challenging to have any kind of relationship with South Sudan. But Sudan is what gave birth to shuttle diplomacy in China. So they're shuttle diplomats for African affairs were assigned to work on the Sudan problem. They've also been going to Zimbabwe. They've gone to some other hot spots, and they've been kept quite busy. So this is a new thing for China to have shuttle diplomacy, and I think we'll be seeing more of this in the future.
And Deborah Brannigan, just back to the BRICS conference underway now in South Africa, BRICS being Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And this is the first time that the fifth meeting of BRICS and the first time they've met in Africa. And, of course, the Chinese new Chinese leader, Xi Jinping, is there. One of the things that they're talking about is a foundation of a BRICS bank. Apparently, South Africa wants the bank in South Africa and Russia wants the bank in Russia. I'm not sure that there's a lot of rule of law and stability in the banking sector in Russia. So how's that going to work out, do you think?
I think it's going to be a while before we see the BRICS bank actually taking off, because the only country out of this group of five that really has money is China. And I'm not sure that China wants to see its money sitting in Russia, in a BRICS bank there. And the Chinese already have some very good banks that are financing their push into globalization. They've got the China Development Bank, and they've got the China Exim Bank, and these are both huge. So the BRICS bank would be symbolic. I know they're discussing it. I don't see it actually happening anytime soon.
So what do you see happening with BRICS then? I mean, is this a photo op or is there some real substance going on in South Africa?
I think it's a photo op in terms of the five countries there and that opportunity. But I do think that what is happening is that the shift in power away from the traditional players, Europe, the United States, that's very real. And whether it's going to go directly to the BRICS or whether it's going to go directly to the BRICS or whether it's going to go to other actors that are also rising, I think these are the questions. China's definitely going to be a player there. I don't see Russia. Russia's not a big brick. South Africa is kind of a small player there. But power influence is shifting to where the population centers are. And that's a long overdue change. I think we should welcome it, even though it's frightening for us.
Well, the big difference between China and the U.S., at least as I see it, is that China has had its charm offensive through soft power. And we have, in the last few decades, wasted so much of our treasure and our good name on hard power in these useless wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Well, I think there's certainly something to be said about that. When you think about the billions and billions that we've been spending on war and the billions and billions that China's been spending building infrastructure, you know, if I was a foreign partner, I could see which one might look a little bit more enticing as someone I wanted to engage with. And I think a lot of countries are thinking a little bit like that. However, you know, when it comes down to it, people around the world still look at the United States, they look at America, and they say, that's what we find really attractive in terms of a model. That's where we would like to move if we had the opportunity. And they're not saying that about China.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Deborah. I know you're at an airport there, and it's a little been distracting for you, but I appreciate your time.
Well, it was great to talk with you, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you. Again, I've been speaking with Deborah Brodigam, who's a professor and director of the International Development Program at Johns Hopkins University and a visiting professor at the University of Bergen in Norway. She's the author of The Dragon's Gift, The Real Story of China in Africa. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the organizer of a conference in Paris recently where the Syrian opposition and representatives of the Kurdish minority met with senior American and French officials to come up with a power-sharing arrangement when Assad falls. Thank you.